I remember with your birth how you struggled because you were born early and having difficulty breathing, and we didn't know if there were heart problems, and you were in the little oxygen tent, and then you were helicoptered down to St. Paul. And I'm not sure I've ever been as fully present or full of love as I was for those first few days with you.
Hello, my friends in the Humanity First community, and welcome back to the Leading for Children podcast. I'm Julia Connolly, show producer and Leading for Children's Development and Communications Associate. I hope you're in the mood for a story, one that may call to mind the relationships that have shaped you in your life and invite you to explore their meaning in new ways. If you tuned into our most recent episode, you'll know I interviewed three mother-daughter duos as they shared the beautiful and sometimes tumultuous stories of their relationships. I felt so privileged to be witness as they showed up authentically and open-heartedly, revealing some of the most vulnerable and relatably human parts of their experiences, both as individuals and in partnership with each other. If you haven't had a chance to listen yet, I invite you to go check it out after this episode. Hearing their stories led us at LFC to reflect on the profound power of storytelling, the way that expressing our own truths and listening to those of others can make us think, offer clarity and validation for our experiences, and facilitate connection. It can be life-changing. We held on to this insight, and we spent the last several months encouraging storytelling across our various community spaces, creating opportunities for people to feel more known, to know others more deeply, to expand our capacities for empathy, and to strengthen the foundation of wisdom that unites and activates us as a greater community. So today's going to be an extension of all of that, as we're holding up the story of a relationship between two members of our Humanity First community. Let's meet our guests, father and son duo, Jonathan and Noah Fribley.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Fribley. I'm a program leader with Leading for Children. And I am delighted and honored to be here with my son, Noah.
Hey there, my name is Noah. I'm the son to Jonathan. And I'm calling in from Minneapolis, Minnesota on this cold and snowy day.
Parent-child relationships evolve over a lifetime, of course, and we also know that they have a special knack for uncovering the deepest and the darkest depths of who we are, what matters to us, and how we'd like to show up in the world. These bonds can bring out the brightest, most colorful, and rich joys of life, and also some of the most challenging and painful truths. How closely we look at these relationships, and how freely we allow their lessons to come forward and guide us, that's in our hands. So in this first segment, Jonathan and Noah return to the very beginnings of their relationship and explore the path they've charted together.
I remember with your birth how you struggled because you were born early and having difficulty breathing, and we didn't know if there were heart problems, and you were in the little oxygen tent, and then you were helicoptered down to St. Paul. And through all of that, I found just being with you. You taught me about being right there with you. And I'm not sure I've ever been as fully present or full of love as I was for those first few days with you. And then after that, you came home to a house where your older siblings took up a lot of space, partly because they just had a lot going, and partly because there were some hard things. And when I think about our relationship, I know that I sort of put us on glide sometimes, because you always seemed like you were just fine. And I know you were managing more than you showed. And I didn't always see that. I didn't always honor that. But I can imagine that that was difficult for you. And then, you know, our adult lives, it feels like we've found ways to really deepen our relationship. But your brothers sucked a lot of air out of the house. I'll pause there. I'm curious what you're thinking.
Thanks for sharing that. And I obviously don't remember my own birth, but it's interesting because from my perspective, I think I see that very differently as you making space for me in a very chaotic sometimes and very busy household. Folk Fest was a thing we did together, but it would also take me to a lot of concerts at Bo Diddz. We would go for bike rides. We'd go for walks. We'd go on trips together. And I don't think there's any right amount for any parent to spend with a child. It depends on the parent and the relationship. But what time we did spend together was incredibly valuable. And it was definitely, if it wasn't quantity, it was quality. That's for sure. And I also know that it wasn't because you didn't want to. I know you were working incredibly hard to have us have a stable, healthy environment. And I knew that at the time, and looking back, it's realizing how rare of a thing that is sometimes. And so you could not control who my siblings are. That's not on you. That certainly did affect who I am now, but in some ways that's life. And I think one of the things I take from that is that you made the best as best you could of a lot of frankly tough situations sometimes. And that is a lesson that I have taken with me for sure.
Well, thanks for that. I'm glad you saw that. Something I've had to tell myself more than once. Started out saying this as a parent and then like, oh, this kind of applies to the rest of life too. Was that I was doing the best I knew how to do at the time, you know?
Yeah.
I do remember moments when I was sort of caught up in my own stuff and you responded in the sensitive way you always have. There's this moment that stuck in my mind. Something to know about us is that we were always a gardening family. And the kids would go out to wherever we lived and they helped in the garden. And I remember one time, it was still early in the season, and you had gone out to the garden and you pulled up carrots, except they were like maybe an inch or two long.
Whoops, they hadn't had
a chance to grow yet. Well, okay. Well, that was my response was, oh, we need those to keep growing so they can get big so we can eat them. And you were delighted by the baby carrots. And I was about, oh, you know, we need those for food, right? And I missed your delight. And you being the sensitive, responsible child you were, looked out later in the garden and you were putting them back in the ground.
A for effort, although.
Well, I mean, that just so fits you. And I don't want to be too hard on myself about carrots, but I missed your delight because I was focused on my processes. And that happened at points. And I appreciate you noticing the moments when we took that time that was just about us and that sort of helped sustain our relationship. I know that some of how I approached being a parent was that I had a couple things that I carried as someone who grew up when I did in the kind of world that I grew up in. I knew I needed to do being a male differently from how I had seen it done around me. And I knew part of that was that I wanted to be in your life and in your siblings' lives in a way that we were companions or partners. And I also knew that something that had gotten in the way of that in my own life was feeling judged by my own father, and that was the way you did parenting, was to be the person who sort of told people how they should be. And that went on for a long time in my family. I remember my father coming to visit me when I was an early childhood teacher and afterwards saying, when are you going to get a real job kind of thing, you know?
Oof.
Yeah. And I knew I never wanted you to experience that sense of needing to be who I wanted you to be. Not that I didn't have huge hopes, okay, but that you do those in the way you were going to do them.
Well, for that, I am very thankful. I appreciate that. No, really. I mean, I think that's actually interesting you say that, because one of the anecdotes I've used to describe you as a person sometimes is your work with dads and kids in the Super Saturdays groups, which to me was just a really, I think you lead and teach by example a lot of the time. And I think I use that as an example of the way you wanted to be in the world was taking something that didn't get enough attention, like the father-child relationship, and nurturing that and providing a structured, unassuming, yet really powerful way to affect that change. And I think I have done my very best to live up to that role model you said of how to be a man. That sounds so not anything like you would ever say, which I guess is the point. But yeah, in some ways, it kind of feels like you're a little bit ahead of your time. Not ahead of your time. You were tapped into a different way of existing, not a mainstream way of being a parent. And I'm ever thankful of that.
Well, thank you for sharing your side of that. We used to do these Saturday dads and kids events. It'd be a bunch of kids and bunch of dads in the early childhood program, figuring out how to be dads, trying to figure out together, like, how do we make this really work as a caring, sensitive relationship? And I was so grateful to be able to do that with you and so proud of being together with you. I just like,
hey, wait a minute. We spent more time. I definitely remember helping you set up for conferences when I was a kid. So we did spend some time together too. I got some starbursts out of it. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. The famous milkshake story on that, right?
I'm not sure I remember it. No.
No. Okay. So you were always so helpful. I mean, if I wanted help with anything, you always were there. And you always found the delight in whatever you were doing. And, you know, mom will talk about how you so enjoyed doing the dishes and thought it was like a privilege to get to do the dishes. But I remember when you were a little bit older and I was doing a workshop here in St. Cloud, and a colleague and I were setting up over at the hotel. And I don't remember if I asked you to go or if you were just hanging with me or what. But anyway, you were there. And I'd said, oh, it'll be fun. We'll set up the tables and get everything out around the room. And, you know, then I'll take you over to the coffee shop and get you a milkshake or something. And so you were there helping me set up. And my colleague, Sandy, was there with me. And she was just like, oh, Noah, you're so helpful. And your reply was, oh, I'm only in it for the milkshake.
You know,
But I don't actually believe that because you just were always willing to.
Can I just respond to that really quick?
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the big lessons I've taken from you and mom and kind of our family in general, but, you know, it's that sort of thing that makes the world go around. You know, you can have grand theories about all sorts of ways societies structure themselves or families should structure themselves, but it's, I don't know, at the end of the day, it's the small things that kind of make that difference. It's neighbors helping each other or family members making meals when somebody has a baby. And I think that's something that you in particular really modeled. You know, you don't have to have a lot to do a lot or have a big impact. And that stuck with me.
Well, I see that in you, in how you've been there for your siblings and how you've been there for mom and me. And the other part of it that shows up for me is just thinking about how, I don't know quite how to describe it, how we've been companions or friends. I mean, maybe you're telling other people things about me. I don't know. But like, we enjoy spending time together and you invite me to do things. And that might not sound like a lot, but that was not the relationship I left home with. You know, when I left home, I couldn't be gone far enough. And it wasn't that my parents didn't love me. They loved me tremendously. They're both still alive. They love me tremendously. I did not feel a partnership, though. Mm-hmm. We didn't share things in the same way that I feel like you and I have. I don't know if I've ever told you how much it meant to me that you invited us to go backpacking with you.
Oh. Like,
really?
Yeah.
And I know we both love the mountains. And actually, you and I have a lot in common that we both love. We both love the mountains. We both love music. You know, there's all kinds of things we love together. We love, but there's no rule that says we have to love them together.
No, that's true.
And somehow we have. And mom and I will say to each other sometimes, is we must have done something right as parents because our kids invite us to do stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not such a mystery to me why we like those things in the same way. It's because you two immersed me in those. I remember like one of my very formative events, I guess, in life was you taking me out to media play at the local music store and buying me, I don't know, like 15 CDs or something. Everything from Coltrane to Hendrix, Joni Mitchell. And remember you saying, this is music that you enjoyed or gained value from or appreciated in your own way. And you wanted me to have these. I didn't have to like them, but just here's an introduction to it. And that must have been a lot of money for us back in the day. It wasn't nothing, I'm sure. And music is now a really big part of my life, and including a lot of that music that you first introduced me to. And so it's not surprising at all, actually, that we, to me at least, that we would go to a folk festival together and enjoy it or share songs when we find them or things like that, because that's something that I learned from you and gained an appreciation of from you. And very similarly with backpacking in the mountains. I mean, that was something you very intentionally did with us and wanted us to experience. And it wasn't just going to the mountains. It's what we did with them. It's how we interacted with them. It's how we interacted with each other in them. Yeah, it's not a mystery to me at all.
Well, we've reached this stage now where the roles are shifting. The last time we went up to the mountains, you had to help us find the pass and climb the rocks.
That's true. Although I did leave the keys in the car. So yeah, the roles have reversed. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, there was that. But
yeah, you know, it checks out.
Knapsack Col, we would have not attempted that pass without you.
That's true. Yeah.
And you took us there and you had the young strength and the confidence. It's funny. I remember your just calm and good cheer and confidence. And I'm remembering two moments in particular. One was when we were trying to scale those rocks in Knapsack Col. And especially I'm remembering how hard it was for mom. And how you were just so calm and encouraging in like a no pressure kind of way. And finally it was getting dark and we had to get down. But she kept trying. We kept trying past when we probably would have if you hadn't been present. And I'm remembering, too, what was the pass with the snow where it was that steep slope?
Kubrick Pass. Yeah,
Kubrick Pass. We were going across that snowfield, and it was steeply sloped and icy, and it was not unreasonable that we could have like literally fallen hundreds of feet, okay, slid down the side of that. And you were just so fully there. It's like, okay, where does the next foot go? Where does the next foot go? And you helped us walk through that in a way that I'd like to think I did with you at Super Saturday or someplace like that, that you helped us do things and be people that we couldn't have been without you at that moment. And I know there's some bumps about this right now, but your generosity and offering for us to be with you when we're old. Not that we're not old now, but when we're really old and need the help, you know, that.
It just got me thinking that I had somebody in my life recently tell me that I'm gentle, which is something I don't necessarily ascribe to myself, but it makes sense. And that story made me think back to my reflections on that and just realizing or kind of reminding myself that there's gentleness can bring out a lot of good things in other people too. And when you talk about different ways of being masculine or different ways of being a man, I think that's something that I took very much to heart, is that gentleness is not something that I think a lot of traditionally male identifying people want to be associated with. In fact, quite the opposite, actually. Aggression and dominance are kind of the default for somebody like us in a lot of ways. And I think one of the things that you demonstrated, either through the work you do or just who you are as a person, is that being gentle and acting with humility and a kind spirit can be just as, if not more effective, or in different ways at helping people through or solving problems or taking care of yourself or other people. And I think you can have yourself to thank then for me getting you across that Q-Prop pass. It was a long-term investment that paid off.
You know, you talk about those masculine roles. I didn't easily have a safe space to be that when I was a kid. And it was maybe college and definitely not fully until I was working with young children that I felt like I could show up as a gentle male. And I guess I'm grateful to know that I think part of what I'm hearing you say is that I helped create a space where you could be some of that as well.
Yeah.
And that was just part of how guys could be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very true. Boy, did I get enough of the kind of aggressive masculine energy from the rest of the world. I certainly didn't need it at home. And it was really nice to have that counterbalance and to understand a different way of being is just invaluable. And it's increasingly and ever thankful for that.
You know, I don't know if we ever directly talked about that.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Nature, nurture, I don't know. But with each of you, I had a sense that there was a space for something other than what the culture gave us on being guys. And I know I certainly needed it. And we're actually pretty fortunate when you think about it in some ways. I don't know what all you remember about when you were little enough to be going to Super Saturdays and that with me, but there were some men around us like Glenn and people like that who were, mm-hmm. we had a little community around us.
Glenn and Kevin and yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't just me. We had some support from others.
Jonathan and Noah's words highlight how being present and intentional has supported and continues to support the evolution of their relationship. Now, let's listen as they consider the role of conflict, how it has surfaced, and how their foundation of trust and shared commitment has helped them to navigate it.
Have we ever really been at odds?
Well, we did not have some of the intense conflicts that parents and children can have. Some of that was probably because you were fairly easygoing as a child. Some of it was probably because you were the third one and you didn't feel a need to tear down the world. But let me share something that's more recent. And that was, if you remember, this spring, we were looking at property together.
Mm-hmm.
Backstory here is that Noah had offered that we might look at finding a place where we could share housing or share housing nearby each other in a rural area. We were looking in rural Wisconsin. And we'd been on this for a while. This had been a 2-year conversation.
That's about right, yeah.
And we went out and looked at a property, and aside from the price, it couldn't have been much better. And you said that you had decided you weren't ready to move to the country. And that must have been hard for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, absolutely. And that moment for me was a culmination of a lot of personal work for myself. My therapist was earning his fees very much. The culmination of some realizations about other relationships in my life. And I felt really guilty, actually, and really conflicted that I had gone on this long journey with you and mom, and then that I changed my mind. And that had very reified implications for you and mom and other people. And it was scary and it was hard. And I think the reason I felt like I could do it, because I needed to make that decision, I think I could do so because I trusted you and mom. In part because I think we assume baseline good intentions between each other. I think I trusted that if I told you this, it wasn't for no reason, or it wasn't because I was being thoughtless, or wasn't considering your feelings, or any other reason except that it's something I needed to do. Yeah, I think that those two pillars of trust and assuming good intentions are kind of what made me feel comfortable and safe doing that.
And when we heard that, I know for me, I mean, there was definitely disappointment, okay? And there was real gratitude that you had been open with where you were and how you felt so that we could have an open understanding with each other so that we weren't keeping secrets or doing things with false pretenses or we weren't doing something just because the other person expected them to or we'd gotten in over our head or anything like that. But I was grateful that you felt like you could be open and honest about it. And it was definitely disappointing. And I was really glad that you shared it. And I had this feeling like you trusted us with it and that it almost gave us something to live up to. Like, oh, I guess we don't get to be petty about this because, so.
I mean, you can be petty, that's all right.
No, but just that you set a stage for doing right by each other.
I won't sing the refrain again that you have yourself to thank for that, but you do. So
Well,
I have agency in this. I know my own person.
yeah, I mean, we always had a lot of respect for you. I do know what Sandy had to say about you. She met you when you were like this in my arms, right? She was sure you were an old soul.
I do go to bed early. Yeah.
That must be what that's
Sometimes.
about.
I think
Yeah.
so.
No, but I certainly appreciate you honoring your parents and just honoring our intent and how we've tried to live our lives. But I also want to honor that you are a person who has had a sense of the light. And I know you've had some really painful, difficult moments. And I also know that you have always turned towards the light. And I mean, I've just been able to trust who you are.
Thank you for saying that first. And everyone in our family has gone through some really hard, painful experiences in their own way, different times, different places, different circumstances, different shape sizes. But as I've grown older, I've seen the full spectrum of family relationships and family dynamics and lived experiences. We have a pretty strong family, and I don't necessarily think that's an accident.
You mentioned this town not being convivial in a number of ways, and that's absolutely true. And yet, we did also have this community around us that really made a difference. And I had modeled for me, what do you do with children? You sing and you dance. So,
Yeah.
you didn't get to go to Montessori school. But when you were an infant toddler, I was still teaching there. Probably once a month or so, we'd take our musical instruments and go on out to the lobby where everybody arrived and hung up their coats and everything. And as kids just came in, we'd be playing music and we'd be dancing out in the hall for like half an hour as everybody arrived. It's like, yeah, that's an okay way to live. I mean, we had some very difficult moments in our family. And we also had these little rituals of just joy and delight that we kind of created together.
I want to note that those communities didn't just happen. Your work didn't just happen. You chose those. You built those. That's something you opted into with intentionality. And because that's who you wanted to be in the world and who you wanted to be with and around and have support you and support them.
Well, when I watch you walk through everything you're walking through, your work, your relationships, the difficulties you've had, I'm just taken by your commitment to doing what you understand to be the right thing, not just for you, but for other people.
I'm at an inflection point in my life in some ways, but also just something I've really struggled with throughout my life is a deep ambivalence about what the right way is to move through the world. As an environmentalist, as a white cis dude from Minnesota, as any number of things, I kind of constantly question and constantly really struggle with whether I'm doing the right thing or not, both by myself and by other people and by the capital W world. And I see you and mom do that with intentionality. And whether or not we've found our respective right answers or not, I think I've really appreciated your partnership in that journey.
I know that mom and I are really struggling right now with how to be in this world. You know, before you were born, you know, we ran away to the country and tried to live without impact. And we learned some things there. And we came back to this world to try to live in it in ways that made a difference. And, you know, I'd like to think I've done some of that, but here I am close to retirement. And frankly, it looks like people have decided to burn the world down and how to act amidst that. And when I look at you, I see someone with a lot of commitment, a lot of strength. I also, like, everything from my understandings to my connections are old. And you have fluency in ways of understanding that I will never have. One example is that when people close to us transitioned, you walked with that in a comfort that I had to earn. And maybe you had to work harder at it than I knew you did. I don't know. But for me, I mean, I'd always had enough sort of gender awareness that I wasn't, you know, gonna, whatever. But to genuinely learn to be comfortable and delight in people close to me going through that life experience, that was not a default setting for me. And you modeled for me a level of just comfort in your skin and almost joy about it. I remember when my dear friend transitioned, you were just like, oh, so, you know, and invited her stories. And I was like, okay, so what am I supposed to do? You know, I guess what I'm saying is that as we look at being people who try to make a difference in this world, you have a place in this emerging world that you see with different eyes from what I see. You're standing on our shoulders. And, you know, we'll take credit for being underneath, but you see things and feel things that are different and that I can learn from. And maybe I need you in a way that we haven't clearly named and seen before, because I still need to make a difference. And in some ways in the world that you now understand more fully than I do, take something near and dear to both of our hearts around climate and the environment. You know, yeah, I've been at it for longer than you have, but you know what's happening now in a way that I don't. And for me to do whatever it is I do next, you know, you have knowledge and you have wisdom that I don't.
Well, thank you for saying that first, but also I'm reflecting that the parents and child dynamic or relationship is one of the few commonplace intergenerational relationships in our society. It's one of the few places where older people and different generations and younger people oftentimes have really strong bonds and can have these conversations. And yeah. Again, I think I'm really lucky that we have that, and that's a strong one that doesn't exist in a lot of other ways or other places, and that we can bridge those generational gaps in some ways and learn from each other. That's a really valuable thing. And especially when that power dynamic of the parent-child relationship is lessened a little bit with age and balanced a little bit with my own wisdoms and experiences, for whatever those are worth. But yeah, I'm just realizing now how rare of a thing that is in our society and how much I value that.
Well, let's stay in touch, huh?
Yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Before it drew to a close, I asked Jonathan and Noah what it was like for them to have this conversation. And since so many of us are navigating similar relationships, I also invited them to offer words of wisdom for parents and children listening. Here's what they said.
It does feel really nice, and I think it doesn't feel extraordinary, I think in part because we've grown to trust and love and care for each other and had variations of these conversations in small doses over the years. This is probably the first time we've been intentional about having them, and maybe certain anecdotes or feelings weren't expressed in the way they were here, but I think we've both been very good at letting each other know how we value and appreciate and understand each other.
That was beautiful. Thanks. Yeah. I don't recall us ever taking this kind of time to purposefully just talk with each other about the quality of our relationship and our history like this. But it does feel like it's built on a whole bunch of years of trust and openness. And I don't think there's ever been anything I have been afraid to say to you. I don't know that we've always taken the time to say it all, though.
I'm hesitant to give other people advice because I feel like parent-child relationships are so unique and so rooted in people's own idiosyncrasies and experiences. And in some ways, I've come to think of family relationships in general. If you can make a family relationship work, you can make any relationship work. Close quarters, conflicting personalities, yet people still come together and share love and support each other. And I fully appreciate and understand that some people need to rethink or remove some of those relationships from their lives. I get that and understand that if it is necessary. But yeah, I think it's kind of a litmus test of trying to work through and see through difference and keep people in your lives despite hardship or disagreement.
You're calling to mind for me something Glenn told me once. We were talking about fathers and about how men, as boys and young men, either don't learn much about relationships at all or learn some really unhelpful messages. And Glenn said being a father is a second chance at learning about relationships. And I do believe that part of what's helped me grow most as a person was holding you and your siblings and knowing how deeply much you mattered and how I wanted to do and be with you. Like, this is where it matters most. That being a parent, get to decide, how do you want to try to live with this little person? Who do you want to be? Who do you want to help them be? And grateful for us going along for the ride together, or the hike, because we didn't do much in cars. There's more hiking.
That's true. Yeah. Thanks for the book fest.
In this story, Noah has helped us recognize the power that parents have in infusing passion into their children. The energy and effort that we invest in them matters. They feel it, it becomes part of who and how they are, and as we saw here, it can come back around and surprise us sometimes. Storytelling is so important. It brings us closer to ourselves and to our communities. Noah and Jonathan spoke to the gratitude that they feel for their foundation of trust. The trust that enables them to share stories with one another freely. And I believe that sometimes it's through taking risks of being vulnerable and welcoming others in, asking hard and sometimes uncomfortable questions, that we cultivate that foundation of trust that is so essential for each of us to thrive and for our communities to thrive. In your life, where might you have an opportunity to invite storytelling? And that, my friends, was our episode. I am so happy that you chose to take a moment in your busy lives as parents, grandparents, friends, coworkers, community members to join us. And I hope you felt the warmth and inspiration that I did hearing Jonathan and Noah's story. This conversation reminds us that through kind, empathetic, and respectful dialogue, we strengthen not only our relationships, but also ourselves and our communities. Because we know that humanity starts with each one of us, and when we all play our part living in accordance with our values, we can create the humanity-first world we aspire to live in, for us and for our children. You can subscribe to the Leading for Children podcast on all streaming platforms, including YouTube, and turn your notifications on so you're the first to know when we post a new episode. Sign up for our mailing list at leadingforchildren.org to stay updated on upcoming events like our national conversations and be notified when our monthly blogs are published. We would also love for you to follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We're so grateful that you're part of our Humanity First community. Wishing you optimism. Till next time.